From Washington, D.C., across the nation and around the world, stand by for an overview of the hottest topics and people being discussed on air, online, at the coffee shop and across the backyard fence, powered by the research of Talkers Magazine, The National Conversation. It's time for the Michael Harrison Wrap. Here's Michael Harrison.
Thank you, Victoria Jones. Monday, October 11th through Friday, October 15th, 2021. It was a week of vaccine rocket and social security boosters, political footballs and football political correctness, our great frenemy China, and stoning the stones. Stand by as we're about to embark upon a bold hour of Black Belt Talk Radio, during which your tolerance for hearing different but legitimate points of view will be tested. We've got righties, lefties, and fence sitters waiting in the wings to tickle your brain with notions, potions, and emotions. Try not to get angry. Just listen and maintain an appropriate amount of educated skepticism. We've got Dr. Dahlia Wax in Las Vegas on the pandemic booster confusion, Dom Giordano in Philadelphia on the politics of education, Dr. Renee Kohansky in Princeton on the mean girls social media platform, Richard Neer in New York on the Gruden debacle, as well as Victoria Jones in the nation's capital on Captain Kirk's latest adventure, not to mention our official decision on who is greater, the Beatles or the Stones. Opinionated yappers from across the country with microphones, smartphones, and digital recording devices sharing their observations as well as the feelings of their target constituents with whom they do their daily dance of affirmation in a fragmented, noisy world in which we try to avoid the modern-day syndrome of seeking victory at the expense of truth. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Wrap, heard coast to coast and around the world on great radio stations in the U.S. and the U.K. An examination of the past week's hottest political and social topics discussed in the American talk media and played out in the theater of your mind. Information's gathered from a variety of sources, including data tracked by the broadcasting trade publication Talkers Magazine, of which I'm editor and publisher. Fasten your CC earbuds. Speaking of which, this installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap is being sponsored in part by the good folks at C. Crane, makers and distributors of fine radios and radio-oriented equipment. Visit their website at ccrane.com or give them a call at 800-522-8863. Okay, here we go. Joining us now is Kevin Casey, executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Kevin, give us a rundown of the 10 most talked about stories on talk shows in America this past week.
Thank you, Michael. At number 10, a three-way tie between immigration reform, climate change, and abortion. Although there are many topics being discussed in the talk media that are getting more attention, the ongoing humanitarian crisis on the southern border, which is very real, continues to be kept alive on news talk radio shows across America.
Conservative talk radio continues to provide pushback against climate change activists, and abortion stayed in the top 10 due to the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruling late in the week that it will allow the controversial Texas law to remain in place while it considers an appeal of a judge's order blocking it.
At number 9, a tie between crime and homelessness. Both of these topics, which are closely tied together, are the major political issues for coming elections in America's urban centers.
Especially in New York, Chicago, San Francisco, and Los Angeles.
At number 8, a tie between William Shatner's space flight and Paul McCartney's comments about the Rolling Stones. The Star Trek fan universe held its collective breath as Captain Kirk took a wild 10-minute ride into what is officially considered the final frontier aboard Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin rocket and survived to emotionally express his gratitude. Shatner, at 90, is now the oldest human being to have flown in space.
As far as Paul McCartney, the most successful living rock star here on Earth, pointing out the superiority of the Beatles over the Rolling Stones in terms of artistic and cultural impact, you'll certainly get no argument about that from me.
At number 7, a four-way tie between the John Gruden flap, race relations, political correctness, and the cancel culture. Actually, all four of these topics are connected. This has been much more than just a sports story.
Can you imagine having to walk away from a 10-year, $100 million contract for having flapped your figurative gums and emails going back some 10 years?
At number 6, the Facebook whistleblower situation and the downside of social media in general. One of the focal points in this discussion is the social media platform Instagram, which is very popular among teenage girls.
And is also reportedly the cause of tremendous negative stress and pressure among members of that impressionable demographic.
At number 5, U.S.-China relations. There's a lot going on here. Militarily, there's concern over Taiwan. Economically, there's great interest being paid to Evergrande, the giant Chinese property developer reportedly on the brink of collapse.
And the nagging suspicion that the CCP was behind the development of COVID-19 in Wuhan refuses to go away.
At number four, the January 6th investigation, tied with Trump's continuing claims of 2020 election fraud. Former Trump advisor Steve Bannon might find himself subject to criminal charges for defying a subpoena to testify before the Special Select Committee.
Meantime, the former president continues to spew complaints that the 2020 election was stolen from him and that U.S. elections are fraudulent, a claim that critics in politics and the media describe as the big lie.
At number three, the politics of education. So here we are, about a month into the new school year, and the ongoing pandemic has impacted schools in a variety of ways.
The politics of education is particularly on display in the process of school board elections, which have taken on a remarkably heightened level of attention and importance from community to community across America.
At number two, COVID-19 vaccines, boosters, masks, and mandates. We are still in the Delta wave and currently not out of the woods, but fortunately, the number of hospitalizations and deaths being reported is decreasing.
The problem is, there's a tremendous amount of confusion, misinformation, and nagging doubt about the efficacy and safety of boosters and vaccines, a subject we'll be exploring on this program in just a moment.
And at number one this week, the economy, inflation, the supply chain, and labor shortages. It was announced that Social Security benefits will increase by 5.9% in 2022, the largest increase in 10 years. But that might not be enough to keep up with the present rate of inflation when it comes to the cost of housing, food, and fuel.
The Biden administration has its hands full dealing with a multitude of problems in this arena, some of which it has the power to move the needle, and others that are beyond its power to deal with directly. Meanwhile, the markets are increasingly nervous, and the future remains uncertain. As the saying goes, it's the economy, stupid. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Deep into its second year, the conversation about COVID-19 remains in the Talkers' top two as either number one or number two, week after week after week. Joining us now from Las Vegas, Nevada, with the latest pandemic poop, is our medical correspondent, a popular talk show host heard daily on the Genesis Communications Network, Dr. Dahlia Wax. Flu cases and deaths reported by the CDC, and flu cases in general, seem to be higher now than years past. What's the story on that?
That was an interesting finding, because there's been a lot of debate on COVID and flu causing a twindemic, and we were expecting that last year, and pleasantly, COVID competed with flu, so we didn't have a very active, robust flu season, thank God. Yet they're saying we are going to have a compensatory flu season where we will be seeing more and more flu cases. But when I decided to look at the CDC's website to see where we're going, I noticed in their graphs, because they have so much fantastic information and graphs to compare from one year to the next, we found that we've already had flu deaths over the last few weeks. We've had flu deaths just from flu alone, in addition to thousands combined with COVID. And that when you look at this year compared to last year and the year before, we have a more active flu season already. And flu season usually doesn't start till November 1st. So the fact that here we are in October, it is, you know, not the best of signs.
When you say not the best of signs, does it relate to COVID, or it's just not the best of signs that we're going to have a bad flu season?
Right. Not a good sign that we might have a bad flu season, as well as COVID. We're still in the Delta wave, even though cases are going down. So if we're having the Delta wave, we really shouldn't be seeing much flu if flu is competing, unless it's a sign that flu is outsmarting. Flu was mad about not being able to be very active last year and is trying to figure out a way to compete with COVID.
You know, it's fascinating the way we talk about these things, outsmarting the masks and then competing with each other. There is an underlying intelligence that these viruses have that we as humans don't fully understand. But this is not just being, you know, artsy and creative in our dialogue. I mean, they are intelligent, aren't they?
They are. Their drive is to live. their drive isn't to fall in love or to make a goal at the end of the week or to have a good fiscal quarter. All a virus's job is to do is live. That's all they have to concentrate on and mutate towards or evolve to. And so it's no surprise that they mutate, that they come up with stronger forms, and that they try to figure out means to outsmart current measures that are in place to try to fight them.
So what's the story with Johnson & Johnson? I'm hearing word that a lot of people who had the one-time J&J vaccine don't know what they should do now about the booster. Some say they could mix it with Moderna. I don't know what the CDC says. What do you say?
Great, great. So multiple studies are showing that even though the Johnson & Johnson shot has some very good efficacy against hospitalizations and death, that if you're going to get a booster, you're going to get more bang for your buck if you get an mRNA booster. And even though we were told by the CDC they don't like the idea of mixing and matching, they're still studying it. Meanwhile, there's been studies saying, look, you know, you'll get good immunity with a second booster, but you'll get even better with a Moderna or a Pfizer. And so a large study that came out yesterday showed that those that got two Modernas and two Pfizers did way better than two Johnson & Johnsons, and they feel it's safe if you have to mix and match.
Let's switch over to San Francisco. I picked up on something about Walgreens are closing because of theft. Who's stealing what?
Yeah, so apparently they're losing at least 1,000 a day in thefts because crime rates are rising. And this isn't just isolated to San Francisco, but San Francisco had to make an announcement yesterday that they need to close 5 more Walgreens. And we are really relying on our pharmacies, including Walgreens, to give out vaccines for people to get their medications. Some of them are even seeking care. So when you see a large city such as that not have the police power to be able to protect these pharmacies from doing what they need in terms of, you know, healthcare, administering healthcare, it's a symptom of something deeper. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens with other Walgreens and CVSs as many of them are being being robbed. I think in New York, is it under a certain amount, $600, there won't be severe criminal cases levied or penalties levied. And so people walk into the drugstores, they grab what they need, walk out. And after a while, these stores can't stay open.
This is a terrible problem. So this relates as much to our conversation on talk media about crime, which is a huge, huge political issue in the urban centers. I mean, it's the number one issue with mayoral elections coming up and various congressional districts containing major cities, you know, looking ahead to 22, that crime is in many cases the number one or two issue on the minds of the voters. And this is a crime story as much as it is a COVID story. You know, we talk about major pharmacies, Walgreens, CVS. I go back, and maybe you do, to a time when there were individually owned drugstores, you know, or they say in Europe, apothecaries. And, you know, now it's these big chains, and a lot of supermarkets have their own pharmacy within them, and some of the box stores do that as well. So it gives us a different view on what type of pharmacies we can trust and which ones we can't, because, you know, some people believe big is better. Am I right?
And also with supply chain issues, you know, these pharmacies and big box stores, as you bring up, have trouble stocking their shelves. When you add to that people stealing the inventory, it's a mess. It's a recipe for disaster.
What about a story that's floating around out there, and you can clarify it for us, hopefully, that some pharmacies have made errors in giving COVID shots to kids that are there for flu shots or miscalculating the dose of the COVID shot. And this can create a lack of confidence in pharmacies as well. What's the reality?
Well, there's been two cases that have been very highly publicized where very young children received COVID shots when their family brought them in for flu shots. It's flu. We're getting geared up for flu season. We're telling people to go get their flu shot. And when a pharmacist, who is one of the strongest people in the medical team, we doctors rely on pharmacists, have a mess up such as this, it starts to make you panic that we don't have the strongest people manning the pharmacies. And we don't know what the effects are when a child gets an adult dose of COVID, which is 10 times the dose that a four-year-old should get. But apparently one of the families is already, getting an attorney, et cetera. But at I believe it was a CVS, they gave a teenager a COVID vaccine that was 6 times the dose of what they were supposed to get because it wasn't diluted. So we're having lack of work ethic. We're having some slipshod sort of things being done, and this concerns people. So I've been telling everybody there's a way to tell the difference what you're going to get. A flu shot is very clear in color, and it's usually in a 3cc, a little larger syringe, whereas a mRNA COVID vaccine is given in a tiny 1cc syringe, and the shot is usually a little off-white, off-color. And it's okay to ask the pharmacist, look, are you sure this is what I'm supposed to be getting?
That's our medical correspondent, Genesis Communications Network radio talk show host and nationally respected physician, Dr. Dahlia Wax. Coming up next, education during the pandemic and the politics of learning. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Hey, fellow radio lover, take down this number, 800-522-8863. I'll repeat it in 50 seconds. C. Crane specializes in high-quality radios and radio-oriented audio products. I've told you about the C. Crane Solar Observer, the CC Pocket Radio, the CC Radio 2E, and the CC Pro Earbuds, and that's just scratching the surface. C. Crane is the company that specializes in radios of all sorts, large and small, that sound good and operate under all kinds of conditions. Good radios that pull AM and FM and shortwave signals and weather and emergency alerts out of the air, as well as leading-edge radio-oriented devices that'll connect you to the internet. When was the last time you heard a commercial on this thing called radio from a company that sells radios? C. Crane is the place to go for radios of all types. Find a radio for yourself or a perfect gift for that radio lover in your life. Call 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-8863. Or visit them online at ccrane.com. Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap. Education is a big topic on the talk waves of America, the pandemic, the politics of school boards, and controversy over standardized testing are among the subjects being dissected. Joining us now is one of Talk Radio's education advocates and experts, former school teacher turned radio legend in the city of brotherly love, Dom Giordano of WPHT Philadelphia. So Dom, it's October, we're halfway through October, and here we are into the school year, and the COVID era persists. What's your take of the national landscape in terms of education per the COVID era?
It's very good, Michael. We have not seen large spread. You know, it sounds a lot if you're in your local area. You hear a school is shutting down. There's a quarantine and all that. And in the places where they've been reasonable, about reasonable quarantine and getting kids back in school and in person, it has been very, I would give it an A minus. The only thing on the horizon, after the school board elections, people are afraid as we get into cold and flu season, some of these school boards, if they're still there, that were the enemies of in-person, if you were before, are going to want to revert back to Zoom and everything else. But I got to say, I am pleasantly surprised. The people I speak with when I have opportunities across the country, we're not seeing large scale. We're not seeing really any schools be shut down. There have been limits. There have been bumps in the road. But I don't know how. It's been great.
Well, that's certainly good to hear. I see clips on television news of people screaming at each other outside school board meetings, mm-hmm. and a lot of strife and anxiety and nastiness. The election of school boards has become a political hotspot. It's sort of like the Supreme Court. What's your insight into this?
I'm in favor of it, and I think that there has to be some reform on the part of school boards. People, imagine, Michael, and some of the school boards here in the Philadelphia area, in our suburbs even, very affluent, educated, they only give people 2 minutes to speak once a month, and then they cut you off and they don't engage. There's no back and forth. And I've said, look, if someone's out of line, they've gone past their time, or they're just screaming, making it personal with the school board, they can be told to leave and escorted out of there. But there should be more engagement at these school board meetings. If that happens, then the ordinary mom and dad is not going to be getting into any of this. It would be the outliers that you could deal with. But since a lot of these school boards will not engage, they just let you talk, and then that's it. It's triggering a lot of agitation. And some of them, like Loudoun and Fairfax in Virginia, these are hotbeds of policies that are wildly unpopular, and they're actually having impact on the governor's race there. And that governor's race has impact nationally on how Democrats and Republicans see where they ought to be going. So overall, I'm so happy that people are paying attention to something they should have been doing all along, schools and the executors of what happens in schools, school boards.
What kind of people generally run for school board positions, or how are school board positions selected?
Their elections, many of them often get their resources. They're backed by the teachers union is one of the biggest on a local level. And I think they're people that are the chamber of commerce type. It used to be many of them business people. It's a plum. There's a lot of intersecting contracts and networking and things that can be done. But what's happened recently, some of them are more activist. And now you're seeing more activists on the right. Here's something, Michael, though, that's a real nugget. We're friendly on my show with a woman in Pennsylvania who was a mom, but is organized across the state and got a venture capitalist to give her $500,000 to kind of groom and give resources to over 100 people up for school board elections across the state that are essentially moms or dads that have had it and wanted to be part of this, but they wanted to be well-heeled enough to compete. And as long as everything is public, there's nothing here, as long as it's transparent, I'm watching the school board races like I am a presidential race. There's downsides to anything, but if we can keep this level of engagement up while filtering out, and I told you the mechanism to do it, those that are loudmouths or have some other agenda, if this continues, I think it's a great thing.
Now, in conclusion, another thing that I have picked up on is that there's a lot of controversy going on about standardized tests versus treating students differently based upon their aptitude. Fill me in.
Well, what's going on in New York? De Blasio again meddling and wanting to take out. They have some of the best gifted and talented schools where they have 5 or 6 Nobel Prize winners in that high school or even down lower over the course of time. In Philadelphia, our gifted and talented schools have gone to a lottery system, if you can imagine. It ought to be we try to come up with objective standards, and some kids may not do as well on standardized tests. Over the course of time, you should provide extra tutoring. You ought to make parents aware that any kid could go to these really good schools. And the point, Michael, right now is not racial per se with whites and black students. It's Asian students. Asian students are dominating these schools. And I happen to think it is because they study harder. They key into the metrics or the hurdles you need to get into it. And I have no problem with that. We want a fair system, but we don't want a lottery system that throws merit to the winds. And that's what de Blasio is doing in the Philadelphia public schools, particularly de Blasio.
That's Dom Giordano, heard daily noon to 3 p.m. on WPHT in Philadelphia. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Let's drop in on our Washington correspondent, the executive director of the D.C. Radio Company, and an internationally respected talk media commentator, Victoria Jones. Did you have any thoughts about William Shatner actually going into space, coming back, being emotional, and being now the oldest person to ever go into space? Who would have thunk it?
Who would have thunk it? And what I loved was when he came back and he was brought to tears and he described his trip to Jeff Bezos. And you sometimes William Shatner's really over the top, you know, as we know, and he plays himself being over the top. When he described his experience going into space for only 10 minutes, he was utterly natural. And in his naturalness, he was the most dramatic he's ever been in his life.
I think he's sincere. I actually think that Shatner gets a bad rap in terms of his image, because he's kind of a good sport about it, and he plays up his quirky personality and his tendency to overact, although I don't think he overacted in the part of Denny Crane back in the Boston legal series and the end of The Practice, that I thought he was brilliant. I think he's actually very good in everything he does. And I think Captain Kirk was, for all of the fun that we make about it, you know, Spock, we are human. I think that he was the right guy to play it at the right time. But I found it very touching. I was wondering what on the video of him telling Jeff Bezos, I hope I keep this feeling for the rest of my life. Thank you for what you've done for me. And Bezos is looking at him and kind of hugged him. I wonder what makes Bezos tick. And I wonder how he felt at that moment, having Captain Kirk / William Shatner so emotionally beholden to him. What did you think?
I wondered that too. And I've been hearing that Bezos's role model has always been more Spock than Kirk, and that Bezos used to play at Star Trek as a boy, and that he used to take on the role of the ship's computer.
Really? Yeah. Mm. And the computers, of course, you know, I think when we get to the 23rd and 24th century, we'll never use the word computer, because everything will be computerized. You know how they go, you know, Jean-Luc Picard, computer, Earl Grey, hot, you know. They always talk to the computer and they call it a computer. I doubt the word computer will be used, because we won't be using computers. We'll be computers. But I have to tell you, Victoria, I was very nervous and worried.
Were you?
Oh, terrible. Because I know how dangerous these missions are and how tricky it is to pull this off, and how many things could go wrong. And we hear plenty of leaks from the staff and disgruntled members of the staff that work for Bezos that the culture at his space company is very stressed, and that a lot of people realize that it's not an exact, completely dependable mode of transportation. And things happen. And I find, you know, I don't want to, you know, pollute the waters, and I don't want to curse anybody. You know, superstition reigns supreme. But I have to tell you, this very cavalier, lighthearted way we're sending all of these celebrities into space, and people who are not necessarily trained astronauts with a space program that's been around for a long time, I think that we're looking for trouble. And that if something terrible happens, and eventually it might, it could set the private space industry back years before it could pick up again. I just think they should be more careful. There's a lot of ego involved. That's all. You know.
Yes. Well, it's kind of like stagecoaches, isn't it?
Definitely. Very much so. Those were very dangerous missions. You took a stagecoach to go out west. You could have been involved in attack by Native Americans. They didn't call them that then. You know, the Indians could have gotten you. And of course, anybody who grew up in the 50s knows the Indians were the bad guys. And boy,
we thought. or you know, a wheel could go. And you could tip over, and if you couldn't fix the wheel, well, you're just, you know, you could die of thirst.
They didn't have that many, you know, gas stations to go to. And the other thing was that there were, you know, robbers, that, you know, a bunch of guys on horses with guns and masks pull you over and steal everything you have, because quite often those Wells Fargo wagons were not only carrying passengers, they were carrying money. They were carrying gold. Who knows?
Yeah.
So that was very dangerous. So transportation's always been dangerous, and exploration is dangerous. And I'm excited about the fact that we go out into space. I mean, you and I have talked about this for years. I think it's wonderful, but there was just something about William Shatner being Captain Kirk and a big deal being made of it, and it, you know, on the heels of the other space flights that we've been talking about, it just made me nervous. And I have to tell you, I breathed a sigh of relief when he came back. Now, the fact that it was only 10 minutes and all that, if you've ever been on a ride at one of the amusement parks or Coney Island or roller coaster, these rides are like maybe a little bit more than, 1.5 Gs, maybe 2 Gs at certain spots where you feel weightless. This thing was many, many Gs. And it was 10 minutes and 3 minutes of weightlessness. If you have a sensitive stomach, that could be quite difficult. It could feel like a lot longer than 10 minutes. It's a big deal. It is a big deal. And I guess Shatner has had an experience that, I don't know, would you like to have an experience like that? Would you do it if they offered you?
Oh, yes, I'd do it. In a minute, I'd do it. And really, what is a minute? What is 10 minutes? And when you think about it, you know, he talks about the blue sky and then he goes into the black. And right. You think, what is time?
Well, you know, he also got, he became metaphoric with the blue is life and the black is death. I don't know. You know, he it was cool. Let's switch gears to the pop culture. Paul McCartney is in the news. And it's very interesting. The Rolling Stones and the Beatles have always shared sort of a similar birth in history, if you will. I've never thought the Rolling Stones are anywhere near as important as the Beatles. I think the Rolling Stones were in many ways imitative of the Beatles in terms of following their trends, quite limited in scope in terms of musical style compared to the Beatles, and did not really have that much impact on the culture of a generation and then the generation that followed that generation and now the generation that's following that generation as the Beatles. Yet the Beatles, of course, broke up in 1969 and the Stones are still touring. And McCartney said they're a touring band and that they are a blues cover band. And those who know music understand that that could be quite a derogatory statement to a group with the history and pride of the Rolling Stones. On the other hand, there's a degree of truth to it, in my opinion. And I actually agree with, I agree with McCartney. Not that I want to in any way diminish the Rolling Stones, but frankly, at this point, just about every Stone song sounds the same, and the Beatles, as the years go by, amaze me by how much more I find in their music and the diversity that they created. You go back to England, and you remember your childhood those days. What are your thoughts about this discussion?
Yeah, well, you got to admit I've got a bit of bias when it comes to this discussion because I grew up in Liverpool. I'm a Beatles girl through and through.
That's Victoria Jones, executive director of the DC Radio Company. Coming up next, a look at the John Gruden mess. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap.
This report is brought to you by Genesis 2 Project, G2P. Recently, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the ODNI, released a preliminary report on possible threats posed by UFOs, now known as Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, UAP, and the progress the Department of Defense UAP Task Force has made in understanding any threats. Dr. J.C. Van Valkenburg is a former Los Alamos National Lab biophysicist who has been working with G2P to bring scientifically sound UAP data to the public.
G2P has released the first scientifically authenticated documentation of UAPs, including images captured with infrared technology. Primo Forensics performed the digital forensic analysis.
In tandem with the ODNI report, these data support the development of relevant processes, policies, technologies, and training for the U.S. military and government personnel upon encountering UAP. Visit Genesis2Project.com.
Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap as we discuss the hottest topics of the past week in the national conversation. There was a huge amount of conversation on not just sports talk shows, but all across news talk radio and TV this past week about the resignation under pressure by Las Vegas Raiders coach and former ESPN Monday Night Football color caller John Gruden. Here to discuss it is legendary radio sports talk show host Richard Neer of WFAN New York.
John Gruden resigned as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. It's still strange to say that instead of Oakland. But some emails were unearthed that he had sent 10 years ago. They were investigating the Washington football team. And there were allegations that there was sexual harassment, a hostile work environment, all sorts of terrible things about the Washington team. So in this investigation, and there were allegedly 650,000 emails that were examined by the investigators, they decided to fine the owner. And as a matter of fact, the owner now is Daniel Snyder's wife, technically. They fined the team $10 million, but they did not really release any detail in terms of what actually went on. They just decided to levy the fines and keep the rest of it quiet. John Gruden, who was then working for ESPN as a color commentator, had sent Bruce Allen, a man he had worked with in Tampa and in other places, some emails. And in these emails, he had made some racial remarks, some alleged homophobic remarks, some sexist remarks. They were pretty strong. And as a result, John Gruden decided he could no longer serve as coach.
Isn't it ironic that they're investigating the Washington football team, formerly the Washington Redskins, which and that was a whole big controversy about all of this inappropriate behavior. And John Gruden winds up being the only person named for participating in that type of, unpopular, antisocial behavior. There's an irony to that, isn't there?
Well, and also the fact that this was an investigation and these emails were leaked to the New York Times and the Washington Post. Now, with 650,000 other emails, there must have been other incriminating things that other people had sent back and forth to each other. So why was Gruden singled out? Why did they decide to release this information to these newspapers to get John Gruden?
Is there a conspiracy theory at work here that they were out to get him specifically or somebody was out to get him specifically?
Well, there is talk of that. There's also talk that other emails will surface that involve other people that will get them in trouble. We don't know that yet. But it's just odd that Gruden really had no tie. I mean, his brother was a coach of the Washington team for a period of
time.
That's
right. That's
and as
right.
I said, he was close to Bruce Allen, and he covered the team as a reporter.
Right.
But essentially, why John Gruden?
Well, that's certainly interesting. Gruden certainly has a reputation for being somewhat of a rogue and a bad boy. You know, he's got that scowly face and it's just
Chucky,
part,
they call him. Yeah,
Chucky, a reference to a movie monster. But that being said, just unpacking this story, you got gender relations, you got race relations, you got this ongoing concern about political correctness and the cancel culture being talked about. And I was interviewed on a program the other day, and they asked, is it fair that Gruden has lost a 10-year, $100 million contract? Think about that, 10-year, $100 million contract. I'd work for half of that if they asked me. I'd work 20 years for $50 million. But all joking aside, and my response was, and I've heard it said by others, that even if they forgave him, he could no longer really be an effective coach because, a large percentage of the team are African-American and they're not going to have faith in him, knowing how he speaks of them and makes fun of them. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And he was not fired. He resigned. Mm. So he saw the situation as not viable going forward. Now, Let's flash forward another year. Would ESPN or some sports entity hire him to do commentary? Would he get involved in a betting situation, you know, like a lot of people who used to play football are in now, in a gambling situation with MGM or somebody like that? So it's very possible that he's not finished in terms of having a media career, or probably his football days are over, I would think. I would think that the league would not really want to open the doors to let him back in.
And for the reasons I cited and others, but moving away from the Gruden story and just people being canceled by the cancel culture and political correctness, which we see so much of. I mean, there's endless stories now. There is also this counterforce of short-term attention span that, you know, it's hot story right now, but 3 years, 4 years down the road, you know, it starts to fade. And there's that other thing that rolls, that happens, and it certainly happens in sports. It happens also in politics, and that is seeking victory at the expense of truth. I find it amazing how sports fans are very quick to, and political fans, political activists, it's the same thing, are very quick to condemn somebody if they're playing on the opposite team, and very quick to forgive them if they're playing on their own team. Have you noticed that?
Oh, no question about it. You know, there are numerous examples of baseball players who used PEDs, performance-enhancing drugs, and when they're playing for the other team, oh, no, that's terrible, they're cheated. And when they get traded or signed as free agents with your team, oh, well, you know, everybody makes mistakes. The former Houston Astros, who were involved in that garbage can sign-stealing scandal, Alex Cora is now with the Boston Red Sox, who are playing in the ALCS over the weekend. So people do get forgiven.
Yeah. You have a history of being in underground progressive rock radio in the early days of that genre, and you have been a mainstay in sports talk radio for years. If there's anybody who's familiar with political correctness and the changing blurry line between what's appropriate and not appropriate from the days of shock jocks being applauded for expanding the envelope to people being fired for, you know, annoying people or being, you know, politically incorrect. What are your thoughts about that fine line between the arts and repression?
Well, it's very difficult because if you go back through your entire life, if you've had a career of any length at all, you are bound to have said something, written something, done something that today would not be considered acceptable. And one of the top novelists wrote a piece when asked about this, and he said, you know, if you only apply today's standards to your written work, then nothing that was written 5 years ago is going to be valid because it doesn't meet today's standards. And today's standards 5 years from now will be changed, will be very, very different. Mm. So it's very hard to just follow the trend in the words you can use, words you can't use, and joking. I mean, you can't be sarcastic on an email or a tweet or even an instant message, any of that stuff, because people don't get your sarcasm. The Rolling Stones, for example, are not performing the song Brown Sugar in concert now. You know why?
Why?
Political correctness.
That's Richard Neer of sports talk station WFAN in New York. His website is richardneer.com. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Okay, we have time for one more. Joining us now from Princeton in New Jersey is nationally respected forensic psychiatrist and medical field podcaster, Dr. Rene Kohansky. What do you think about all the talk about the internet? Certainly Facebook is having its problems, and that's something that goes beyond just psychology or even psychiatry. But Instagram has been getting also the spotlight of scrutiny put upon it in terms of the impact it has on teenagers.
Instagram sometimes is like one big fat mean girl. And you, as you aptly said, you don't have to be a psychiatrist to figure that out. You know, it's, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I think the internet, when it first came out, was something that was really quite a gift to us. And over time, it has morphed into something that's really, I think, when we look at the sum of the whole parts, it's become more negative than it has positive. And you and I have talked about this a lot. I think the impact that it's had on our brains has really been quite negative. And this whole thing with Instagram, I think, actually illustrates the negative impact that everything is having on us.
When you say mean girls, can you define it a little bit further for people who may not know what that means, or who haven't been around teenagers in a while?
Well, it's when people get together and they gang up on each other and they say nasty things, and then they form a clique where they are saying things that are not kind, and it gets repeated and repeated and repeated, and it's a form of bullying, to be quite frank.
How about the whole body image and the self-image issue about how teenagers feel about themselves as it applies to the impact of this platform?
This platform is a completely self-absorbed platform. I mean, it's one big selfie, I would say, taken on top of another selfie. And probably girls disproportionate to boys, but it's consumed with getting that right picture, the right angle. If you remember, there was a period when we had all those duck face pictures. Mm. And, you know, it's that kind of attention to oneself and is not a healthy thing. We have whole entire industries built on people who have a social media platform, and that's their entire contribution. So that kind of self-involvement is never a healthy thing to a person or to an individual or to a society. And then the kind of body image that we force upon our young people in these platforms is not healthy. To some degree, it's moving away from that. We're seeing media kind of pushing a more diversity, I guess you could say, in terms of what is acceptable of body images. But no, I think Instagram has been extremely toxic, especially to young women, to have these perfect, gorgeous bodies. Or not even perfect. Let me modify that. It's not even perfect, gorgeous. In some cases, it's exaggerations. It's extreme exaggerations of what a perfect, gorgeous body is. You have exaggerations of body parts that they think should be what the ideal body part should be, and then women get all kinds of surgery, and men get kinds of surgeries to try to identify with what is supposed to be ideal, and that's not healthy for people.
You know, I don't personally get too involved with these platforms, although I'm a media person, so within the context of my media work, I'm familiar with them. But I personally stay away from them. I, for example, do not have a Facebook presence personally. Talkers Magazine does, you know, businesses I'm involved with, but I certainly am familiar with the controversies and the splash that TikTok has made, but I didn't personally become familiar with the details of it until TikTok invaded YouTube. And now YouTube has this thing called YouTube Shorts, where there are 30-second YouTubes, and they're based on the style that TikTok has done. And I can't believe the number of young girls, teenagers, that flaunt themselves on it. I'm laughing only because it's like, is this, have I fallen on a porn site? Is this YouTube?
And the double message, right, that it gives to our young people. So on the one hand, we are telling our young people that, no, you are not your body. You're not to be objectified. You are much more important than just your body image. And then on the other hand, we inundate them with these ridiculous body images that are impossible to sustain. And what's a young person to do? So we create this incredible confusion about bodies, and then we're surprised that nobody is understanding what is of value in society. How am I of value in society? What part of me is of value in society? And then not only that, we go and reward this with money and fame. And then when the money and fame run out, what are these poor people left with? And then what are we as society to value, Michael?
That's nationally renowned forensic psychiatrist and medical field podcaster Dr. Renee Kohansky, checking in from Princeton, New Jersey. And that about does it for this latest installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap, an overview of the national conversation, looking back at the week of Monday, October 4th through Friday, October 8th, 2021. Looking ahead, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next week, including the ever-lurking unknown factor, that unanticipated surprise story
that can take the national conversation spinning off in a totally unexpected direction. We sure do live in interesting times. I can be reached via email at michael@talkers.com. My podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, can be heard at mhinterview.com. And if you want to stay in touch with the inner workings of the talk media industry, please visit talkers.com. The Michael Harrison Wrap. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison. Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Wrap is a production of Good Phone Communications in conjunction with Talkers Magazine and Talk Media Network. Copyright 2021, all rights reserved.